This is the Future of HR podcast, episode 176.
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you got to have a broader discussion with your leadership team. Do we want this to be a part of our DNA? And the belief is that that active listening is actually going to drive a better employee experience that in result is going to provide stronger business results. Because that linkage of all of it is really, really important. And then as they have that conversation and get that buy-in, it's taking a look at how they operate their day-to-day practices and try to insert more frequent and real-time solicitation of feedback and how you can loop it back to action quickly. And so many companies have roundtables and town halls and listening sessions. If all you have today is an annual survey, you got to take a step back and say, is that really keeping up with the pace of the business? And if not, let me insert a variety of listening methods that are going to allow my employees to truly feel that we care, that we value their point of view, and that we're going to take some of those real examples and quickly put some wins on the board around, you gave us this great idea. We've fast-tracked it through our processes, and we're going to launch a pilot. We're going to launch an MVP. We're going to launch an experiment with a clustered small group and then communicate that. Because what that does is it builds trust. And I think trust is the key element that we probably haven't talked that much about. But in my opinion, what you're garnering and what you're building within your organization is trust at the core.
How can you build a culture of trust through active listening? Why is the employee experience as important as the customer experience? Hi, I'm your host, JP Elliott, and this is the Future of HR podcast, the only podcast whose mission is to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. On each episode, I interview successful HR executives and thought leaders who are reimagining, rethinking, and leading our field into the future. During our candid conversations, you will learn about their career journeys, their lessons learned along the way, and their insights on how to take our field, and most importantly, your career, to the next level. Most HR teams are executing better than ever, and yet many CHROs are wrestling with the same question. Are we truly creating enterprise value or just delivering excellent support? After interviewing more than 150 CHROs and senior HR leaders, one thing is clear, execution excellence is now table stakes. And while execution earns trust, value creation is what differentiates the best HR teams. That insight led me to create my keynote presentation, Future Proofing HR, Creating Value by Unlocking the Capabilities of Tomorrow. This isn't a motivational talk, it's a practical roadmap for helping HR leaders move beyond execution and step into a new standard of leadership, evolving from business partners to true value creators. I've delivered this keynote for HR teams at companies like AbbVie, Nike, Corning, Kohler, and LabCorp. And if you're planning an HR conference or leadership event and want your team to leave thinking and operating at a higher level, visit futureofhr.com to get in touch. Let's design a keynote that meets the moment HR is in right now and helps your team show up differently because of it. And with that, my guest this week is DJ Casto. DJ is the Executive Vice President and CHRO at Synchrony, a premier consumer financial services company with over 20,000 employees. He's been leading HR there for the past 7 years, and as you will soon hear, DJ and the Synchrony leadership team are not afraid to make bold decisions, especially when it comes to culture. While most companies are mandating return-to-office policies, Synchrony did something different. They listened to their employees and maintained a flexible, performance-based work model. Not because it was easy, but because the data and employee feedback told them this was right for the business and what their employees wanted. That decision reflects something deeper about how DJ and his team operate. At Synchrony, they're building a culture where active listening isn't just part of their DNA, it's how they co-create the employee experience and shape the organization. They've even created a dedicated frontline experience team focused on improving both the employee journey and the customer experience, recognizing that you can't deliver exceptional customer outcomes without investing in the people who serve them. In my conversation with DJ, we're going to explore how Synchrony has been using active listening to co-design solutions with employees, why they chose to buck the return to office trend, and what it looks like when you stop surveying culture and start shaping it through genuine employee partnership. I'd love to hear your thoughts in this episode, so drop me a line on LinkedIn and say hello. And now let's jump into my conversation with DJ. DJ, welcome to the Future of HR podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, thank you for being on the podcast. Excited to talk to you about what you've been doing at Synchrony and your career and really how you built it a pretty amazing culture and doing some things that are maybe bucking some of the current trends. We're going to get into that. But I want to start with the fact that you said you kind of fell into HR and you discovered the field almost by accident, which is actually sometimes a more consistent story than we would think. But I'm interested to know how this happened for you. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, well, I think few of us grow up in the early ages saying, I'm going to be an HR leader when I grow up. I started by just getting my accounting degree. I was first generation going to college in my household. And I had an Uncle Michael who was an accountant. He was kind of my role model. And so I got through undergrad. I got my accounting degree. You always have to trust your gut. Something was there to say, I'm not sure this is my craft or this is what I'm going to be doing long term for a living. Good foundation. And one of my professors said, go talk to the, it's called Masters in Industrial Labor Relations. That's a mouthful, but really it was HR at West Virginia University. And there was this executive in residence there. His name's Hutch, but William Hutchinson. He led Total Rewards for Union Carbide that got bought by Dow Chemical. He was amazing to unpack all the ways in which HR was helping to enable the business and strategy of several corporations. And I just really leaned into his stories and the connection and took a leap of faith and got my master's. And right out of there, started with Pepsi. And they develop you through just acquiring a set of critical experiences. And I've really fallen in love with the work that is human resources.
That's terrific. Having that accounting background, maybe before you switched into industrial relations, do you feel you're more like, I guess, comfortable around spreadsheets and the business piece? Did that give you a leg up? Because I feel like that's one thing we're always missing if we come from just a liberal arts degree.
Yeah, I think for me, I gravitate towards and understand the P&L just because that was a bit of my foundation. And so, yes, I actually think a business degree or certainly an accounting or finance background just helps you to understand the language of corporate America and allows you to really connect with a lot of your clients that you're supporting in the business in a really thoughtful way.
Yeah, I wish more HR programs would actually have basic accounting just built into the program. Because I think we have to demystify this idea of a P&L is so complicated and hard, when frankly, the math is just adding and subtracting. And we're doing algebra, I'm out, right? It's been a while. But the P&L piece.
100%. I think it just gives you a confidence level to lean in to learn, right? And that's what it allowed me, where both at Synchrony and my prior employer, just having confidence to ask those questions that maybe sometimes as HR leaders, because we don't own it on a day-to-day basis, we pause to engage on those topics. And your leaders really light up if you're sort of like, hey, I'd like you to talk through with me the revenue line or help me understand what you're seeing here as a potential loss leader for us as we're entering a new product in market. So I just think it allows a whole different dialogue with your colleagues in the business, and it helps you to learn the business faster, which is always critical for our ability to do the work we do on the talent and strategy side.
Yeah. And I imagine it gave you a leg up at Pepsi too, where it's such a go-to-market organization, really consumer-driven, consumer insights, very business-focused. Pepsi's really been an academy company, one of the few academy companies I think are still around, not only for CEOs, because there's a big story in Fortune around this a while back, but really what Alan Church did there and helping build that out and the commitment to leadership development. I'm curious, when you think about the 9 years or so you spent at Pepsi, what did you really learn from a great HR team that sort of stuck with you?
For me, one of the things that PepsiCo does really, really well is it, and Alan led a lot of this with regards to the skills and critical experiences that are needed for you to be able to get that foundational senior management, executive development offerings to be able to compete and win for those opportunities in the future. And so they gave you those through both formal leadership development offerings, but probably the most important thing they did is get you into jobs that provided those critical experiences. jobs that were probably too big at the time for the background and experience you had, but they gave you kind of the ecosystem around you to give you both the confidence, the ability to fail, and the ability to succeed and build that business acumen and knowledge and understanding. And I do think that's fundamental in someone's ability to kind of get to the big job is ensuring that you understand the business deeply. And it's one of those key takeaways I have from them. And certainly the company I'm at today is a GE heritage company. GE did very similar-esque model. And so I've been blessed to work for what I would call two academy organizations. And I think we're starting to do some really great work at Synchrony to continue that heritage and legacy.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. And I think it's great to have that heritage and understand what great looks like. And I think it's shifted a little bit, but for you to be able to build your own is pretty exciting. And we're going to fast forward because you have been at Synchrony for over 7 years. You've been the CHRO for 7 years, I believe, maybe a little longer with Synchrony, but the CHRO for 7 years, which is a really, that's a great run. We kind of had our initial conversation. I was thinking about if you looked back at your first year and now at year seven, what would be some things that you would tell maybe DJ CHRO year one versus now some lessons learned? Because 7 years is a nice time to be able to really learn a lot over that period.
Yeah, listen, the first couple years, you're definitely acquiring all those foundational learnings of what it just means to be able to succeed in the role, meet the company's short-term goals, long-term strategy needs, get through your board meetings and understand how to navigate both the board, your colleagues on the ELT, and stay really linked to ensuring you're helping your CEO and your colleagues around the ELT table to meet their goals and objectives through kind of your talent agenda and obviously human capital being, I believe, one of the key enablers and making all that possible. What I probably would have pushed myself even earlier on is to get a lot more comfortable with kind of this agile mindset. Kind of happened for me during the pandemic. Our CEO, Brian Doubles, our Chief Technology and Operations Officer, Carol Jewell, they really pushed us during the pandemic period to first and foremost take care of our people, which I think we did in a best-in-class way, but also allow this moment to just operate the business, go forward in a lot more of an agile way because everything accelerated. And in HR, sometimes we're more traditional, we're late to the table with regards to kind of adopting some of these ways in which you can operate. It doesn't have to just sit in technology. It can sit across the entire business, which is what we really talked about at Synchrony. And I took that to heart within human resources. And candidly, we were a little too static. You know, it was a little too annual mindset, annual planning mindset. And the business operates too fast for that. And so I had to get a lot more comfortable adopting some of these agile principles, and we can unpack them if you'd like. But the concept of the employee experience being just like the consumer experience, that the benefits and leadership learnings I have, those are our products. And are our products serving the employees' needs the way that the business is requiring? And testing and learning. This is language that we just use every day now. 7 years ago, that was a bit more rare.
Yeah, I think agile and having a product management methodology, a mindset around the employee experience and having roadmaps, understanding the employee journey, really thinking about what are we really delivering? How's the outcome? I think is so critical. Because to your point of this, like, annual process we get into. You know, we may have a leadership development program we've ran for 5 years. We haven't really updated it. People are just using the same playbook. It's like, well, some things have to sunset. Some things have to either change, transition. The business is moving, to your point. When you think about maybe implementing that, do you have a couple, one or two ideas you'd want to give to HR leaders thinking about how do you implement agile from a functional perspective or some things that unlock that for you?
First of all, I would say the art of kind of the daily stand-up with your staff is really important, because if you have a more agile kind of stand-up mentality, you're going to talk about things more real time. And I think that's one of the pushes I would have for anyone who's exploring this is how do you get more real time feedback? For us in HR, it's from the employee base. What are tools and resources that you can use to get that real time feedback? How do you see what's in the backlog? What's in the queue that needs to come front and center because of this business need we're trying to solve for right now? One of the examples that happened during the pandemic was just a great need for people to have more and more resources to help them navigate kind of mental wellness. And so there were two asks that came out of the business. Okay, I know we have a program designed to offer this assistance, but it's a cold process is the feedback we got. You got to call this 1-800 number. It feels very transactional. I've got a real concern I'm trying to navigate. Can you make it more human? And so we actually, through the employee voice, stood up wellness coaches. We just got a roster of coaches that we published both their picture and their bios and their names. This isn't strategic, but it's a little more tactical, but it was exactly what the employees wanted and needed. They needed to feel that they were calling and talking to a human. And our uptick rate was significant. We kept adding coaches to mirror the workforce's needs. The second thing we launched was a sabbatical. And we literally launched a sabbatical in a more of a MVP, minimal viable product kind of concept. We told the organization, we don't have this all worked out yet. We're trying to figure out what is the most important to you on this benefit. If you're interested, sign up here. We're going to host some listening sessions. And together, we're going to co-design what's really important. And we always told them up front, it's not going to be paid. So I wanted to manage some expectations. But what came out of the sabbatical was benefits. Benefits were what was really concerning people. I'll go take a 6-week sabbatical because I need it, but I need to ensure my medical benefits are intact for my family and myself. And so we designed it around that. Our employees are offered their benefits during that period of time, and we wouldn't have come up with that without their voice. And I certainly 7 years ago wouldn't have got comfortable launching something saying, hey, I don't have all the design principles. If you're interested, sign up, and then we'll do the listening sessions to kind of co-design it with you.
What's so awesome about that, actually, DJ, is the fact that you have the culture and trust to do it. Because a lot of times in corporate America and, you know, in HR, we have to have all the answers. Our leaders expect us to have all of it figured out. We've thought through every different option, what's going to happen, the intended, unintended consequences. And then we're like, finally roll it out. Well, that was like 9 months ago, but we needed to do it yesterday. So I love the fact you're doing MVPs, daily standups, just really, really powerful. And I think that comes through in some of the research I did. One of the big themes I see for Synchrony is this idea of listening, co-designing, and even listening is part of your DNA. Talk a little more about how do you really put this in practice? That's a great example. Maybe there's more things you're doing to make this a daily ritual, a monthly ritual, quarterly ritual.
A lot of corporations have an annual pulse survey, right? Many of us go through that process and we leverage that annual survey to help kind of shepherd what's next, what's top of mind for our employees, how do they feel? But again, anything that has the word annual in front of it, that by itself is outdated by the time you get the data, you unpack the data, you decide what to do and what to invest in. And so yes, we do have a survey we do every year to kind of look at year over year progress. We partner with Great Places to Work. They're terrific partners for two fronts. One, they've got a great tool, their enterprise tool that helps us to facilitate this. But then two, they do a lot of great benchmarking. And I love benchmarking because I don't know how good I am to industry unless I've got real data to be able to correlate in some of these core questions that we're all asking our workforce on a constant basis. But in addition to the annual survey, we added a quarterly pulse. We've added monthly roundtables. The Great Places to Work data never tells us what to do. It tells us what to listen for. So we'll go out and do a targeted pulse survey around our way of working or around goals and priorities or around getting clear, actionable feedback from your manager. And then we'll take all that data and we'll see what the data is telling us, red, yellow, or green, and then we'll start to do a bunch of roundtables. And together, we'll start to pulse out, okay, you're telling us that we launched our way of working and gave you flexibility and choice, and we told you to purposely come together for moments that matter most. That sounds great in a marketing campaign. Guess what? Employees want to know, what is a purposeful connection? And so through the listening exercise, and we ask the targeted question, do you have clarity on when and how you should be coming together? Well, we weren't getting the score that we wanted. And so the score didn't look great. The roundtables validated for us that, hey, we love that you're giving us flexibility and choice, but we actually need some clear examples of when and how you want us to come together. I need some clearer examples as a leader to broker with my employees on when and how we're coming together. And again, we didn't wait 6 months to do that. We took the survey, we closed the survey on a Wednesday. We then were doing roundtables the next week. And then we were coming up with recommendations the week after that. To me, that's active listening, where employees can feel a direct response to the time they took to participate in the survey. I think it's one of the reasons why we have over a 90% participation rate in our surveys. The reason for that is because people feel it. They feel the trust, they feel the validation. Now, we always are honest with them, and people will give me direct shout outs in their feedback, where it's like, DJ, I hope you're reading this. Just because you put it in the survey does not mean I'm going to go deliver on that. I am going to prioritize employee feedback just like we prioritize anything else in the business. And so when I see an aggregate theme that is hitting a majority of my workforce, that's where I'm going to prioritize that quarter. And just because you've put that benefit in the survey 12 times, and I actually have to be that direct and real with my workforce, doesn't mean I don't hear you. It just means it's not being prioritized because it's not an aggregate theme.
Yeah. Well, I love one thing I think it's really important that you said here is that the annual engagement survey, Great Place to Work survey, whatever survey you're using, is not to diagnose all the issues. It's to listen for where you need to go deeper to really uncover what's happening. And I think that's where we go wrong with engagement surveys in general. That's number one, is we expect those to have the answers and people are going to be able to do something with that. And we push the people analytics team to find something that's going to be really tangible. Second is that cycle is really fast. I'm not sure if I've ever heard of a faster cycle. So my only follow-up there is, on you get to week three, are you really working this with the leadership team? Like, who's looking at the trends and themes, right? Who's involved in that? Then to prioritize, to your point, hey, we're going to do these three things. We're not going to do these three other things right now. It didn't rise to that level.
Yeah. So listen, I've put a dedicated team. Now I say team, it's a couple resources on the pulse employee engagement process, because it, to your point, is core to our DNA. And so as soon as the survey is closing, Claudine Halverson, who's my head of talent with her team, is they know that we're going to want some of that data real time. And then they provide the recommendations. And we've got roundtables, ask us anythings, town halls, they're already embedded in our core DNA. So it's just prioritizing, okay, this quarter, based off of the feedback that we've got, we're going to leverage our town hall to address it. Hey, we saw an early theme on X. We're now going to do a little bit of listening to validate if we're on the right track to help you do your job better, or to provide managers more tools and resources to provide more candid and clear direction in the performance process. Every town hall, every ask us anything, which is a really cool concept that we introduced during the pandemic. Our CEO just does the call is just ask us anything. And so anything that's top of mind, it's not formal, it kind of comes up. We as a leadership team are there. We just take it question by question. All of those things collectively matter to this point around the definition of active listening. The active part is equally as important to the listening part, because people will tune out and stop participating if they feel like, I've put that in the survey 12 times, you're not listening to me. And then you also have to be clear that I am listening, but it isn't being prioritized because we look at the aggregate themes. You got to say these things over and over again so that your employee base responds appropriately and understands our process. And this isn't a check the box exercise, but it is a process to be able to prioritize our time and focus on the things that matter most to you based off of your voice.
Yeah, I love how transparent you're being with the process, because a lot of times it can be opaque. It's a mystery. You do the survey, we come back to you a month later, 3 months later, the town hall, but nothing's really changed for people. So I think that active part is really key. The other thing, and I want to just make sure I got it right, DJ, it sounds like this is what you're doing. As you guys are having different Ask Me Anything town halls, coffee chats, all the things you've been doing throughout the year, all the active listening, you're taking that data, compiling it. Now with AI, it's got to be a little bit easier to see the themes. So when you get to the annual survey, you're like, hey, we've heard this. This is definitely something we got to dig more into, or this is now emerging. Let's go and do a focus group on that. So it's not that like I'm listening one time a year. And I think that's what a lot of companies do. They're listening like one time a year, and that's a recipe for really disengagement.
I'll give you a great example. My head of technology and operations, Carol Jewell, and I, we put together a frontline experience team because, you know, 2/3 of Synchrony are contact center associates helping to meet our consumers' needs. And so it's the bulk of our workforce. Because of needing to have more of this infrastructure, we actually dedicated roles both on my team and her team. It's a partnership between technology. We actually brought someone over that did a lot of the customer journey work. And so now he's helping us to do more of the employee journey work and trying to really identify these friction points with the frontline workforce. And that they go out on a consistent basis to say, hey, we're members of the frontline experience team. We took your Great Places to Work data. We have a process where any frontline employee can submit an idea that allows to be more productive, to drive a better consumer experience. But you can imagine those are thousands of comments that are coming through. And so you had to your point, put some infrastructure around the data analytics, the technology roadmaps, and declare that there is a frontline experience team looking at this every single day to take your voice, your feedback, and figure out how to get net better. And we also have a belief that the best ideas are going to come from that end user. And for us, that is our employee, right? They're going to tell us where the real friction points are existing with either technology or how we could resolve a consumer issue faster, how we could give them time and resources to make sure they're their best, both mentally and physically. All of that comes through kind of these employee voice channels.
Yeah, I love that you guys have a frontline member experience team, right? That is amazing. I think that's so great. You guys are putting the resources where it matters. And I think 100% that you will have a much better customer experience because you have better employee experience and you're listening to them. So kudos to you guys, what you're building. Actually, it all sounds simple to write, DJ. You're like, of course you do this. But a lot of organizations don't. They don't execute. They don't put the resources. They don't make it part of their values and their culture. Now, another thing you guys have done that I thought was interesting, you're already kind of, I would say, bucking one trend, but you're bucking another trend, which is this idea of return to office. And you guys have actually are embracing and sticking with remote hybrid work and more flexibility than a lot of organizations. What convinced you and the leadership team that was the right path?
Back to a belief and a commitment to active listening. You can't ask your employee base, what do they want? Which for us, 86% of our employees came back and said, if you can formalize this ability for me to have flexibility and choice on when and how I come into our physical spaces, because for us, meaning our workforce, they gave us very clear examples where it was allowing them to be their best, both personally and professionally, and driving real performance and outcomes. So again, for us, we've always said that this is a benefit that should drive performance. We've been very clear and transparent about that. But when 86% of your employees tell you that, if you're going to have active listening, you can't say, okay, great, now we're going to go back to the old way of working. It was really a very clear message from our workforce to say, would you please look at dramatically reimagining the way we work? And before the pandemic, we were a 99.9% in-office culture. So I don't want to mislead the audience to say, oh, they were probably already kind of half in on this and it just put them on the tipping. No, we debated just like all of you, could a job work from home painfully pre-pandemic? Now, we did have the ability to get all of our employees home. So we know we have a unique business model to get all of our employees home in 3 weeks during the pandemic. And it just allowed us to have a beautiful case study on A, the ability to work agile and move to action quickly, to myth bust all these things that we said weren't possible, like you can't do that job from home. Well, now you can. And it was ripe for reimagination. And so for us, we went all in. We said, if our employees are telling us this and we're performing, let's use this as a moment to really move forward versus going back. As a leadership team, we all committed that we were going to name this the grand experiment. We told our employee base that. That gave us permission to test and learn, candidly fail on a few things because everything hasn't been beautiful as we launched this way of working, but we've been committed to it. And we continue to pulse our employees. And by the way, that 86% is now like over 96% of our employees saying, hey, please continue to offer this benefit. It really is game-changing for me. It's changed my life in a multitude of ways. And my CEO has been very clear, as long as we're performing, we are committed to this model. And there has to be a correlation to the two. The model has to unlock both your personal and professional ability to hit kind of peak performance.
Yeah, I think this piece gets lost on the performance piece. You have a high performance culture. We expect people to do the job. If they're not doing their job for some reason, not performing, that's a different conversation than where they might be working. But to set that up and make sure that there's like an equal sign, flexibility equals performance, helps everyone understand that, yeah, this is a responsibility. It's not an entitlement. And we're going to bring that to our culture. We're going to respect it. And they probably feel even better about it now, seeing a lot of companies have just sort of mandated return to office and dictated that in some ways, which again, fits different business models. You guys have made it work, which is terrific. Other companies have chosen to go that way. And there's pros and cons to both. Where I've seen the flexibility go wrong, right, is you've got different leaders, different functions, kind of operating differently, different standards. How do you guys make sure you don't have 10 different versions of flexibility at Synchrony?
The one thing we're able to offer is everybody, no matter what level in the company, from my frontline contact center associate all the way to an executive, everyone gets access to flexibility and choice. So the one thing we don't have based off our business model is this have and have not scenario that I think causes a lot of friction in a workforce, right? So I really appreciate where other companies, this can't be a competitive advantage that it is for us. Their business model just won't allow it. We also got out of the business of trying to make everything kind of 1+1=2 as a part of the launch of this. We said every member of our workforce is going to have very different, unique needs. Some might want to be in the office, which we do, have some that choose to come in 5 days a week. We have others that don't need to come in as much based off of their role, their knowledge, their insight. We don't try to get prescriptive on the amount of days or the amount of flexibility or the amount of choice. What we've reimagined is the entire ecosystem to support it. So I mentioned a couple things failed as a part of the grand experiment. One was onboarding and training. We thought we could do this from home. We were doing it during the pandemic. We just weren't doing it well. And we just had to acknowledge that some things are in need of a physical touch, that coaching relationship on the onset for my contact center agent. We call it bookend training. The first few days that they come into the Synchrony ecosystem, and then we have a period of time, we call it bridge, where they're going to start taking calls by themselves for the first time. Those are two really critical elements of kind of that employee journey for their first 90 days of being onboarded in the company. We tried for a long time to do that at home, and we finally just declared it and said, that's not working. That is one of those non-negotiables for us as you think about maintaining flexibility and choice, giving people what they need to perform at their best, that we had to invest in. So we brought back this concept of bookend training for our associates. And then we also created a culture center here at headquarters. So we took 26,000 square feet and we created huge training rooms, huge workout areas. And we said, hey, when you and your team need to come together, come use this physical space for a workout, for a brainstorming session, for a team meeting, moments that matter, as I talked earlier, but very clear and defined moments. We bring all of our exempt employees to headquarters for their onboarding experience so that they get to understand all of the policies, procedures, cultures, practices, how decisions are made. Those are things we didn't do on the onset of the grand experiment. That's where we've really leaned into, is really the type of offerings that need to be provided, not necessarily the days of the week you need to be in the office, but where are these times in which we do need groups to come together to drive clarity of role, performance outcomes and expectations, solving a real problem through a workout or bolt session. And so that's what we've leaned into more, is clarity around when versus describing the days of the week.
What you've really done, which is the right way, is you've thought about what matters for the business. What's impacting the customer? What's impacting the employee experience? How do we make sure that we're moving the business forward and allow the flexibility with the performance? So I think it's brilliant. And thank you for sharing so much detail on that, DJ. I think it'll be inspirational for a lot of HR leaders that are still figuring out how to make this work. Now, we've gotten pretty far in this conversation without really talking about AI. So I guess we should pat ourselves on the back, because that is one of the top conversations we always have now. But I know you guys are really approaching AI not as a technology project, but really as a people workflow design, redesign initiative, which is absolutely the right way to think about it. Maybe tell us a little more about how you guys are approaching AI enablement at Synchrony.
AI will dramatically change the way work is performed and done. Certainly should be top of mind of the entire leadership team, but specifically human resources, around how we have to take a big step back and think about how we're designing workflow. How are we thinking about assembling teams? How are we thinking about learning and development? All of these things have to be completely reimagined. Now, none of us have full clarity around how generative AI and how, as it continues to learn and become even more sophisticated, around how it will show up in the consumer experience and the employee experience. And so this gets back to why agile is so important. That foundation will serve us well as we think about this next generation of workforce redesign. One thing is we're just trying to get everyone at Synchrony access to the tools and resources. Again, back to the associate, all the way to the executive. How do we encourage more usage and adoption? Now, we're a regulated bank, and we take the privilege of having consumer data very serious. And so we're going to always do that with the right governance and safeguards. But where is the places in which we can experiment with this great technology unlock that's going to allow us to think differently on how work gets done? And I think all of us, if we use that as our starting point, then it allows us to really zoom out and think about the art of possible. And so for us in HR, I'll give you just a real example, because I know that's one of the audiences of your podcast, is we partnered with our innovation team to do, we call it a Bolt session. So it's a day and a half workout where I had all of my US HR team in a room where we basically looked at the end-to-end employee journey and where are there these opportunities to insert the art of possible with AI. You could call them the friction points. You could call them the tactical work that none of us want to do, but are just a part of your BAU, of your job description, and really outlined it all. What that did was just provide kind of unity of engagement, where everyone's in it together. Everyone feels like their voice is being heard on these friction points. We brought in some of our strategic partners like Workday. So we're at Workday House. And so we had members of Workday there where they could listen and co-design with us. Are there unlocks that we could leverage within Workday to accelerate some of this versus having to do all net new? We brought in some external thinking with PwC and McKinsey to kind of help, again, on the second day, look at some of these solutions. And we brought in our internal tech team so that they could hear our voiceover and really think through, okay, that is possible. What you are describing there, let me tell you another use case in the business. And it helps us to create a roadmap now where we will position to the AI working group, because back to prioritization, everybody has a lot of use cases. We're looking at where we can have more strategic big bets. And so where we can think about impact at scale. How can we help the consumer experience at scale? How can we think about eliminating some of the drudgery of this workflow at scale to allow people some capacity? That day and a half session really unlocked a lot for us, and people are doing that across the entire company. So our innovation team is really leading some of these Bolt session exercises where instead of getting just fixated on one singular use case, how do you zoom out to think about the bigger art of possible?
Yeah, I think it sounds like the right approach. In some ways, this is really like GE workout sessions, process redesign from the back in the day. We're now using AI, but I think the two things that make it work for your culture that we should underline for folks is one, listening. The ability to bring a lot of different groups in, different stakeholders, different perspectives, listen together and then co-create in one way, I think is really powerful. Now, I have a feeling a lot of CHROs or HR leaders who are listening are pretty inspired by your approach and listening and co-designing. Where should they start if they want to get going? Where would they want to enhance their capabilities? What advice would you have for a CHRO who probably has an annual survey but wants to build this listening culture?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, you got to have a broader discussion with your leadership team. Do we want this to be a part of our DNA? And the belief is that active listening is actually going to drive a better employee experience that in result is going to provide stronger business results. Because that linkage of all of it is really, really important. And then as they have that conversation and get that buy-in, it's taking a look at how they operate their day-to-day practices and try to insert more frequent and real-time solicitation of feedback and how you can loop it back to action quickly. And so many companies have roundtables and town halls and listening sessions. If all you have today is an annual survey, you got to take a step back and say, is that really keeping up with the pace of the business? And if not, let me insert a variety of listening methods that are going to allow my employees to truly feel that we care, that we value their point of view, and that we're going to take some of those real examples and quickly put some wins on the board around, you gave us this great idea. We've fast-tracked it through our processes, and we're going to launch a pilot. We're going to launch an MVP. We're going to launch an experiment with a clustered small group, and then communicate that. Because what that does is it builds trust. And I think trust is the key element that we probably haven't talked that much about. But in my opinion, what you're garnering and what you're building within your organization is trust at the core. Not everyone gets everything they want, but they appreciate and understand the candor, the attempt, the focus, and the action.
Yeah, so well said. Trust really is the foundation for all of this to work. Shore that up first. But I also think that that piece of advice of get with your leadership team and make sure that they believe the same assumption is true. Because if the leadership team's not bought in, it's going to be hard to go and make this actually build that trust, get the MVPs, have all the results you guys have had, which has been pretty extraordinary. DJ, last question for you. What is one word or phrase you believe will define the future of HR over the next 5 to 10 years?
Transformative. This is our moment. If we all lean into what is possible with AI, which I think is going to be as game-changing as the internet when it got embedded into our workflows and how we think about things, it's just a really unique opportunity to reimagine. And I think many of us are at a place where it just makes sense, given how dynamic the environment is, how dynamic consumers' needs are. I'm sure all of you are thinking right now around 2026 and your 2030 strategies. This is going to be a key enabler in all of that. And so I believe that right now is our moment as a member of the executive leadership team to be transformative.
Well, DJ, I think this has been a transformative conversation. You guys are doing some transformative work at Synchrony. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. I enjoyed the conversation.
Same here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Future of HR Podcast. Thanks again to DJ for sharing how Synchrony is using active listening to co-create and shape their great place to work culture. As always, you can go to futureofhr.com to view all of our past notes and learn more about my mission to inspire the next generation of HR leaders. And if you enjoyed this episode of Future of HR, I think you'll enjoy my Future of HR newsletter, which is the only newsletter that's focused on helping you to elevate your career and business impact. Go to futureofhr.com to subscribe and be sure to download my HR Leaders Blueprint, which is 18 pages of real-world advice from over 100 HR thought leaders with simple, actual, and proven strategies to advance your career. Next week, we'll be back with my guest, Paula Killajuri, who is a distinguished professor of international business and strategy at Northeastern University, a best-selling author, and president and co-founder of Skillify, which delivers innovative learning solutions to help organizations, leaders, and individuals become more culturally agile. We're going to dive into Paula's latest research on cultural agility and what leadership in the age of AI really looks like. You won't want to miss this conversation. Thanks again for being part of our Future of HR community.